Gudiños en el arco, la defensa es colosal. González, Orlando, La Torre, Nicolás Fuentes y Chumpitas. Chale, Mifrin y Cubillas y el gran Perico León. Bailón y Alberto Gallardo completan.
Welcome back to the Peruvian Waltz Podcast. I'm your host, Peter Galindo. Joining me this evening are three panelists this week. We'll start first with Renato Vilches. Renato, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Just got back from a long day of school, but really excited to record a new podcast today and talk everything that's happened this week.
Indeed, that makes two of us, and hopefully all of us. Also joining us is Kevin Montalvan. Kevin, how are you?
Doing well, Peter. I'm just happy to see Peruvian teams in action again. I hope to talk on that.
Yes, we will soon. But before we do, we will reintroduce Chito Paulino back on the podcast. Chito, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Just back from all that craziness that happened in the Brazilian league. I'm fortunate for Paulo Guerrero. Inter didn't win the championship, but it was a good season for Flamengo. And as Renato and Kevin said, I'm happy that soccer is restarting too, only 1 month ahead from seeing La Blanquiroja again. So I'm excited about that.
Indeed, lots to discuss, so we'll get right into it, why don't we? We'll start first with, as Kevin kind of teased there, the first sort of action for a Peruvian team in 2021, which was a Cesar Vallejo. They played Caracas in the first leg of their Copa Libertadores first phase matchup. It finished scoreless at the Monumental. This was on Wednesday. This was despite a late Yoralis Mena missed penalty, which could have won Cesar Vallejo the game, but he ended up missing it to his left, literally missing the entire frame of the goal, if you could believe it. But guys, obviously a lot of takeaways from many different people in this game. Just want to get your thoughts on the overall performance from Cesar Vallejo in this one. Renato, what did you make of how they played on Wednesday afternoon?
Honestly, it's a mixed bag. I could see the approach Chemo was doing at most points around the first half. Cesar Vallejo was dominating. I did like what I was seeing for some like eye-catching players like Eric Murillo. Also, Renzo Garzas was excellent in the defense, and Yisuke, I really liked him in the midfield. But at the same time, I feel like it was just a typical like team wasting their chances match. Like there was points where Usabe had some like clear chances, but they just couldn't finish it properly. Now, granted, I think Caracas' goalkeeper was just excellent throughout the match. I mean, I feel like he was in prime Buffon mode throughout the 90 minutes. But even then, it's like you'd think players like Mena would have done better. And that missed penalty just added more, like, it was from insult to injury, unfortunately.
Yeah,
but
really,
things
really
could have been worse.
Yes, definitely could have been worse. At least they did get the clean sheet, didn't concede an away goal, which is obviously important. So maybe that will end up benefiting them in a way next week. Kevin, what did you think of the performance from Cesar Vallejo?
Overall, I think it's positive. We went into the match with, I think, considering the weakest point as Rabines, since he was the only one that was not part of the original 11. So he was the question mark. And honestly, he's still a question mark because I think he was tested maybe once. I think Caracas had one shot on target. So the defense did the job. The midfield was pretty, I want to say it was fairly well. Isike did a lot of work up and down the field. I liked Murillo was definitely had some flair. Cedrón, who I think did not add too much, or were not too involved in this match. And that was a missed opportunity for Vallejo.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, when you consider, though, that overall this was their first competitive match in, 4 months, really not that bad at all, I guess. And it did take them a while to get into the game, but once they did, you could kind of see what it is they were trying to do, at least. Chito, what did you make of Cesar Vallejo's performance?
I think it was pretty positive considering all the attacks they have, the possession of the ball, something that I'm pretty sure Chemo is obsessed with. I think in general was good. Something that I was a little bit afraid of is that I expected more from Figuera and Cedrón. All the experience that they have playing these kind of tournaments in big teams, like I thought that Figuera's experience at Universitario and Cedrón's experience in Alianza and in other different teams playing these kind of games will be important. Mm-hmm. But it didn't happen. And especially because I think that the right side was the weakest side of Vallejo. But I think they will do really, really good in Venezuela. This was the first game in 4 months. So I think there is room for improvement, of course, but they did pretty, pretty well. Yeah. And something I want to mention, it's Isike. Isike did an amazing game.
Yeah.
He was defending. He generated attacks. He recovered the ball. He was on point.
He definitely was. He was really good. Probably the man of the match for Vallejo overall. I mean, I'm pretty much in agreement with you guys. I was seeing a lot of people slagging off the quality of Peruvian football in this one. Obviously, they were going to take a shot no matter what, because you feel like there are certain people, and I won't name names, who kind of like to trash Liga Uno a little bit. And again, you have to consider this too. First competitive match in 4 months. You know, they're playing in a pandemic. They've had very little, well, I shouldn't say very little, but they've certainly had, you know, a bit of a disorganized preparation method, let's say. So to get the scoreless draw and to be pretty solid defensively, like they pretty much heavily outshot Caracas in this one, 17-7. They only conceded, what was it, 0.2 expected goals, and they put up 1.2 non-penalty expected goals of their own. So probably could have done enough to win it, but as we mentioned, goalkeeping was on point for Caracas, and that's not the first time we're probably going to say that about a goalkeeper facing a Peruvian club. The one probably difference I'd like to see, which I think we'll get on to when we kind of preview the second leg in a bit, is maybe they just be a little more incisive and a bit more direct when they have the ball, because you could tell that when they hit it a little bit longer, when they were playing a little bit more incisively, Caracas had no idea how to defend it, and that's when Cesar Vallejo got in behind and got some of their best chances. But I do digress. As for the 0-0 itself, Chito, do you think this is a good or a bad result for Cesar Vallejo entering the second leg next week away from home?
Well, when I saw the formation of the team, knowing that they will play with five defenders, right away I thought that Chemo didn't want Caracas to score any goals. I think that he was planning on that, so he achieved that goal. Especially knowing that Fleitas, Garces, and Ramos, they are not too fast, and I'm pretty sure he was, Chemo was aware that Caracas strikers were fast. I think they did pretty good, so I think it was a positive thing to get a 0-0 playing at home. I think in general, the whole team is happy with the result. Maybe not because they missed a penalty in towards the end of the game, but in general, I think it was a good result.
Yeah, I'd say so as well. Kevin, what do you think? Do you think 0-0 is positive, at least for Cesar Vallejo entering next week?
Yes. In this two-legged match, I said it was going to stay tight. There's definitely rust on the team. So I was like 0-0, 1-0, either way, keeps Vallejo in the game. But with the 0-0, they score one in Venezuela, and it makes it monumentally harder for this Caracas side, who really isn't creating much of anything.
Yeah, very true, very true. Renato, what do you think that 0-0 is encouraging for Cesar Vallejo for the second leg?
It depends on how you think of it. I wouldn't say call too much encouraging, because after all, your purpose is to win the match. But there are two things that Cesar Vallejo could take. The big thing is that thankfully they were, Caracas did not score on them. And considering that it was an away match for Caracas, that was very vital since there's no away goals. But also, I think for what they've done, Cesar Vallejo, without any like proper preparation, especially with no preseason matches, I think they did what they could. I just hope that in the second leg they can try to take things more seriously and also like take more great chances to finish. And I just wish them the best.
Indeed, we all do, I am sure. So maybe looking ahead a little bit to next week, what do we think Cesar Vallejo have to do to progress to the next round? Like, what are some maybe tactical changes, selection changes, what have you, that you would like to see next week or even expect to see next week? Renato, I'll start with you on that.
I'm not sure much about like selection changes, because I mostly thought everything was doing fine. Though I maybe would, I do wonder if Chemo should try to like consider maybe just going full on attacking, especially like just getting maybe just reconsidering about the option of a back five and going maybe with that back three that he did during most of Liga Uno last season, especially to complicate like the wing back, especially Morillo, because he was at some moments very dangerous when going forward. So I hope I can see that.
Yeah, I think we all do. We always like to see Morillo getting forward and kind of doing his thing on the ball for sure. Kevin, what would you like to see or expect to see from Cesar Vallejo next week to get the job done?
I personally think that Vallejo's building up steam, and I would think that Chemo isn't going to change his formation or anything. But if I had to pick, I think Cuba is like a Swiss Army knife. He could slot in there for Vasquez, who I think was a weak point in that match, or possibly Cedrón. But that's about it. I think that the team is very well drilled and should do fine.
Indeed, we shall see. Chito, what would you like to see for next week?
Well, ideally, I would like to see Chemo play just with four defenders and have someone, another player on the midfield. Maybe put Silva just from the beginning. Or if you just want to keep the same formation, just don't expect too much with Figuera. Figuera was one of the players that didn't like that much because he lost the ball multiple times. He looked like a not experienced player, so I will play with Tucci. He only played a minute, but he was really good. He was all over the place protecting, and especially because that was the time where Isike went all the way up. Mm-hmm. So I will have Tucci ready when needed.
I personally feel like Gemma will probably keep the formation just to kind of help protect the defense mainly. Like we've kind of mentioned, there isn't a lot of pace back there. So I think the more protection and cover they have, the better. Especially because I thought that Samson, the Caracas number nine, I thought his hold up play and or just general pressing was causing a lot of problems for especially Garcés, who I think was in a really entertaining individual battle with him. But I think that would just suit all parties. But certainly Garcés's job wasn't made any easier by Figuera's, let's call it what it is, mediocre performance. I think I might be giving him a little bit of a break there. But yeah, that's personally what I'd like to see. And just playing more direct in general, because I feel like, especially when they were playing out from the back, or at least when they had goal kicks, that's when Cesar Vallejo was getting in behind a lot. And with Silva from the start, possibly, maybe then they could get that decisive goal that they need to really put the tie to bed. But we shall see. So that second leg will be next week. We'll see if Cesar Vallejo can advance to the second round. And just before we move on, a brief update on Ayacucho's situation. They're still waiting for their firm opponent. We know it's going to be a Brazilian club. It's been whittled down now that the league season has ended. It's going to be either Fluminense or Grêmio, but it's very possible that it could be, actually, not very possible, it will happen 2 days after the Cup, if Grêmio ends up getting there. So that could be quite something, Fluminense as well. I mean, it could be very condensed, let's say, which could give Ayacucho a bit of an advantage, to say the least. We'll move over to happenings with La Selección, because there was a camp that was organized. The first microciclo of 11 players was unveiled last Wednesday afternoon. This was all Liga Uno based players. The 11 players were as follows: Renato Solís, Carlos Cáceres, José Carvalho, Eduardo Caballero, Josué Estrada, Jorge Murugarra, Horacio Calcaterra, Martín Tábara, Edinson Ramírez, Christopher Olivares, and Alex Valera. So those were the 11. The likes of Jefferson Farfán, Alexander Callens, Marcos López, they're all training at La Videna currently, kind of away from that group, as far as I understand. But, you know, given that we will be seeing probably quite a few Liga Uno-based players in future camps, guys, what are your takeaways from, just in general, the 11 players who were called up? Like, essentially, who are the names that you think could be worth monitoring over the next little bit here? Kevin, what do you think?
Personally, I think the person with the highest chances of getting some minutes would be Valera, since he seems like a very good offensive player that could play possibly as a nine or on the outside as a winger. I think he has good chances, and with the Lau situation, it's very likely that he's going to get minutes in Libertadores for Lau.
Definitely looks like it. He will. Renato, who is your maybe name or names that you are looking at the most? And I know that you're upset with Gianfranco Chavez not being in this call-up, but maybe try to not hold too much of a grudge.
Yes, I am a bit upset of that, but on the bright side, I'm happy to see Martin Tavera get some recognition, because I feel like it's been overdue for a while that he's not been selected, but to see him be selected is really nice, because I feel he could possibly potentially be a Yotun alternative, considering that Yotun's not really a starter at his club, and we might have to find the long term sooner than later. And I also heard that Davida scored a goal in one of the practice matches, which is pretty nice to see him like do well in the training. And another player that I'm looking forward is Enrique Ramirez. He had an excellent season at Utese last season, and I feel like he can be like a candidate for the number 10 position in the national team.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely made a lot of progress last season. He's been rewarded in a way with this call-up. Now he's at Muni. We'll see how he progresses there. But certainly a name to watch. And obviously, Tavera, look, this is probably going to become a Martin Tavera propaganda podcast at some point if he does end up getting called up. So I'll just leave it at that. I think everybody knows my feelings about Tavera right now. Chito, who are some names for you, or who are the names for you to watch from these call-up?
I would say Edinson Ramirez and Christopher Olivares. Last season, there were players who had improved a lot their level, especially because they generated a lot of attacks. They took advantage of their speed, and they were able to score as well, something that we definitely need at the national team. So I would say those are the ones that definitely got my attention. Hopefully, we didn't get too much information about their progress or all the different things that they did at La Videna, but hopefully they will get a chance in the future for the national team. Well, Tavera, we know how good he is and how he will be able to help a lot of the national team. He had progressed a lot. He's able to generate play, especially knowing that Yotun is his level is pretty much going down. So I think he will be a good replacement and keeping him in the future, and especially if Peña doesn't work in the national team, I think Tavera will be the next man taking that jersey.
I know that Kevin already brought this up, but I obviously with Alex Valera being called up, and obviously the question about, you know, who's going to be the number nine for the next few months, and, you know, what are the options at Gareca's disposal? I'll just ask Chito and Renato this for their thoughts, but given the current dearth of striker options, obviously that could change, and we'll talk about one of the potential options later in the show. Is there a chance that Valera could be involved in the March squad, given that he's been called up previously, and coupled with the fact that he's probably going to have a little bit of match fitness under him? Chito, what do you think?
I think, yeah, it's an option. Gareca knows him. They have been working together for over 6 months since the beginning of the qualifiers. So, yeah, it's an option, especially because I know he has a little advantage over Zúcar and over Aldair. So, yeah, he could be an option. But I think there are three players that are ahead of team. I think we're going to name them in a little bit. But, yeah, it could be an option, considering that he always Gareca usually calls 3-4 strikers. So, yeah, it's an option.
Yeah, and at the very least, maybe an option for the future as well. Renato, what do you think? Do you think Valera could be involved here come March time?
Yeah, I think it could be a possibility. I've been told that during the training match, he was very active. I think he even assisted for Tabata's goal in that training match. We know what Valera could offer, as he's shown last season, and I just hope he can do the same thing with Lau. And I can tell Gareca must be interested in him, like with the call-ups, like with like getting a senior call up last year and now a training call-up. So who knows if he will be called up, but I just hope if he does, I'll wish him the best.
Indeed, indeed. But certainly a name to watch. I mean, considering Valera recorded, what was it, 0.38 non-penalty expected goals per 90 minutes with, of all teams, Yacuabamba last season as a 24-year-old in his first top-flight season. That's really, really impressive. Still raw, but there's certainly a body of work there, and he has the composure, he has the shot, he has for lack of a better term, power in his game to really, I think, make an impact this year, and I really can't wait to see what his progress will look like in 2021, and whether that's with the national team or with Universitario, it's going to be very intriguing, to say the least. So let's move over to the under 20 call-ups. 14 players were called up to train with the senior national team, La Selección Mayor. This was from February 22nd to 23rd, as far as I am aware. This was at La Videna, of course. Which of the 14 names that were called up intrigued you the most, keeping in mind that the current player pool is what it is, and the fact that Gareca and his Comando Técnico are clearly paying attention to these kids? Renato, which names do you feel will have piqued Gareca's interest given all of this? I feel like I know one of those names that you're going to give, but if you have any others, you may do so.
It's actually the one of the players that scored in that training match. It was Paolo Reyna. And I have a feeling that Gareca has been paying quite a lot of attention to him. Of course, left back is an area that we can use some depth on. But I feel with Paolo Reyna, something about him that stands out is that not only like he all has the physique, the height, and the speed, but also he's so damn good like defensively. He is dominant on tackling. He's perfect on the ground and air, and I could see where there's a bit of offense game in him. Now, granted, I think he can improve on that because at moments with Melgar, at times he was a bit hesitant to offer a creative pass, but when he sees a chance, I feel like he could be deadly, especially that one time where I forgot the opponent he gave that assist for, but he was running past defenders and gave an asset. So I hope that this year will be a standout year for him, for both Melgar. And who knows? I think he could be a seleccionado at some sooner than we think.
Indeed, indeed. Kevin, who are the names that kind of piqued your curiosity, and or which are the names that you feel Gareca will have been like, oh, okay, he's someone who I should probably pay closer attention to?
Okay, so keeping in mind that CONMEBOL kind of set up a U20 like side league, mm-hmm. so that the U20 games would happen right before the senior sides would play for the qualifiers. I think Yuriel Celi and Aaron Sanchez will be the guys with the most experience on their team, and they'll be the ones to watch. Sanchez in defense, he's become an undisputed starter for Cantolao, Celi as well. And I would not be surprised if those are the next two names to leave the Peruvian league with all the minutes they've gotten at such a young age.
Yeah, very good point. Chito, who are the names for you that you're kind of looking at and saying, yeah, these guys are probably going to have impressed Gareca for sure?
Well, Yuriel Celi, I recall that Gareca had been asked about him a couple of times. But another name that I wanna mention is Grimaldo. I remember with Solano's team about 2 years ago, he impressed, especially because we had some difficulties with strikers back when Sancudito played as our striker. Grimaldo was a sub, and he got a lot of positive feedback from the fans. So, and especially because I know he was able to play a couple of games for Cristal last year. Then with Mosquera, he stopped playing, but I'm glad to see him back, which means that he had been working really, really hard with the reserve team, and he's back on a call-up, so that's good. Hopefully, his level is pretty, pretty good, and it's not just a couple of good games with that he played with Solano.
All good names. Another one for me that, at least someone who I've been watching for the last probably 6-8 months, look, I don't think he's going to be in the national team picture anytime soon, but he's just one to watch for me. Alfonso Barco from San Martin. Someone who, when he kind of broke into the first team environment at the age of 18, kind of caught my eye, not just because he's super tall and was that young and was starting, but you know, I did like his off-the-ball qualities, the way that he pressed and his ability to recover possession. And I feel like if he just improves his composure on the ball, maybe takes a second or two to maybe survey his options, he'd be a player who I feel could be very influential in a deep-lying midfield role, who can be an all-action midfielder, right? Someone who can press, someone who can defend, someone who can play with the ball, right? Just basically do everything, kind of like in that Pedro Aquino type mold, if you kind of want to pick a comparison. Over to the under-17s, this was the first cycle as well for them. They are training virtually, keep in mind, so that's kind of thrown a wrench in this, but either way, which of the names that were called up kind of intrigue you the most? Renato, I'll start with you on that.
There's this one kid, Alianza, that I've been told that he's been spoken highly of. It's Jorge de Castillo, Alianza Reserve Academy player. He is, I've been told that he's like a number 10 creative playmaker, similar to Selly, but I've been told that he's been more dynamic, a bit faster, which is something that could spark some attention. The only thing I've been that he needs to improve on is his physique, which, I mean, he's still like under 17, so he's got plenty of time to improve. But I also been known that he also has the same agency that took Aguilar to is taking Aguilar to Man City, which is something that you guys can pay attention to maybe at some moment. So I would pay attention to that name.
Yeah, there you go. Kevin, I don't maybe want to read too much into this, but a lot of Alianza youngsters were on the list. What do you think that kind of says about, I guess, just the state of the cantera of Alianza, despite the fact that, you know, they've had their struggles, but they're still producing tons and tons and tons of Peruvian youth national teamers?
So Alianza clearly made a huge, huge effort to in scouting and trying to add as many young talents to their to the club as possible. You could see it with the U20s they added, the U17s. If you look at the squad now, it's incredibly young. It kind of reminds of a San Martin. And I think that because Alianza has so many, it kind of pressured the federation to allow second division clubs to play the reserve tournament alongside the first division reserve sides. So I think that speaks pretty well of the kids in the squad.
Yeah, and it seems like most of the Alianza kids in the call-up were some of the most promising by all accounts, which I guess for Alianza fans is encouraging, provided they can keep the trajectory going. Chito, what do you make of the Alianza kind of youth revolution going on?
Well, something that I want to add to what Kevin just mentioned, something that got my attention was, yeah, I saw some of the hate that the Facebook post had, seeing so many players from Alianza on the list. But then also something else that got my attention as an Alianza fan is that on the U20 call-up to play against the national teams, there were no players from Alianza. Maybe it's because those players were playing on the first team of Alianza, and maybe they didn't have a good performance during the season. That's why Alianza got relegated. But still, it's crazy. It was only a three-year gap between both teams, and then just seeing the U17 pretty much loaded with Alianza players.
But yeah, I mean, as Kevin mentioned, clearly they made an effort to scout pretty much everywhere across the country, and just pretty much picked up whoever was the most promising from all these smaller academies, for lack of a better term. So yeah, we shall see what happens there with that. We'll move over to Peruvians abroad. One of the names that could be and probably will be in the striker conversation for the national team right now, Santiago Ormeño. A lot of developments happening with him. Obviously, he's been a name that's been thrown out there for months and months and months now. He did bag a hat trick in Puebla's win over Juarez recently, which kind of reignited the conversation almost to a maximum at this stage. Gareca has sent a letter requesting the call-up, and despite the reports that apparently Tata Martino was going to speak to Ormeño about calling him up to El Tri, the Mexican national team, that appears to not be happening at all. So, Kevin, is this encouraging from a Peruvian perspective? Do you feel like Ormeño is going to be representing La Selección, even if it's not in March, but at some point soon?
I think it's kind of clear from the conflicting reports that at the very least he'll be on the, you know, whatever the 40-man mm-hmm. squad list is of reservations and whatnot.
Right.
So that will be entirely up to Ormeño if he says yes. I think if he weighs his options, he could potentially have 10 official matches with Peru if he does the 2 in March, the 2 in May, you know, like 5-6 in the Copa America before he'll even have a chance to have one official match with Mexico, because I don't think they have any official matches before the Gold Cup. Mm-hmm. And even then, I don't follow Mexico as much as I would like, but in the Gold Cup, I know they have that rule, because I've seen the U.S. do it, where they'll take some players, play them in the group stage, and then bring the actual first team in to play, like, the knockout stage.
Yeah.
And I feel that would be a complete waste for him. He would know better than I would if that's worth his time.
Yeah, possibly. Chito, what do you think about the Ormeño situation as it currently stands? Do you think he's going to get called up in March or at some point soon, or is that still up in the air for you?
Well, I think he's going to get the call up. Now the question is he going to accept it? Because I'm pretty sure if he has both options on table, he will definitely pick the Mexican one. But I don't know if the rumors about Tata Martino interest is real or not, especially because I had seen that information coming from Peru, not from Mexico. So I don't know if it's true or not.
Yeah.
But we'll see. Especially because most likely the call-ups will take place next week. So yeah. That's when he will need to accept it or not.
Yeah, that's right. That's actually true. Actually, the Peru call-ups happen before the Mexico call-up happens. So I guess, in a way, Peru has an advantage in that regard. Renato, what do you think about the Ormeño situation here?
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, it's going to be Ormeño's choice. You just hope that he chooses wisely. He looks through his options. I think at this point, it's a great time to call him up for Peru, because right now our striker situation, it's looking like a bit at the moment. I mean, of course, you got Paolo. He just recovered. He's finally training with the Internacional first team. But I think the Internacional coach wants to slowly integrate him instead of just throwing him to the deep end. Aldair has kind of been getting criticized recently for his performances at America de Calle. La Padula is on a mixed form with Benevento. Not terrible, but you just wish you could see him score, which was the whole reason why people wanted him in the first place. Sukar's still adapting in Austria, which I doubt he's going to get called up. I do think that with Ormeño, who is playing, which is the key word currently, because right now most of our players are not playing, and also he's on good form, I think he has a great chance to be called up, and I think he could be like a great addition to our depth.
I mean, yeah, I don't think there's any doubting, you know, what Ormeño could provide, nor kind of his qualities or weaknesses or what have you. I just feel like, you know, maybe this is just me overanalyzing everything. I'm not so sure, but, you know, Ormeño did voice his, shall we say, excitement about representing Peru months ago. And then you come to find out as recently as a week or two ago that there was really no contact with the Federation. I feel like that wouldn't rub off on him very well, especially when he kind of comes out and voices how much he wants to play for the national team, supposedly. And I mean, in some cases he has done this, only to then really not get any sort of feedback or any sort of clarity about his situation. I think that would frustrate him. Now, once he actually has the opportunity presented to him, will that change his mind? Possibly. But all I'm going to say is that I think Peru probably will desperately want him to come, just given their current striker situation. And if he doesn't come, well, then Gareca's going to have maybe a little bit of a dilemma.
Just to add, like, a similar situation already happened with La Padula, actually, because people were thinking that Gareca was possibly, like, just dumped the idea of calling up La Padula after he was thinking that La Padula still wanted to play for Italy. But after the whole tattoo post, then that's where the whole press went crazy. And that's where it just leads us to us now. La Padula is finally with us.
Yeah, the tattoo, the infamous tattoo. Oh, God. Anyway, we'll move over to Luis Abraham. Speaking of crazy situations, it was sounding like he was going to be frozen out at Meles if he didn't accept their latest offer for a new contract. To those who don't know, Abraham's contract expires in June, and Meles basically said, if you don't sign, we're going to freeze you out until your contract expires. But then Lautaro Gianetti was sold to Atlanta United, which leaves Meles's center back depth a little bit thin, which kind of puts the leverage in Abraham's favor in a way. Now, he's been offered a new deal and is said to be mulling it over, but he also has interest from Celta. He also has interest from Alaves, which we discussed in a previous episode. They both clearly want him. Apparently, Real Betis is still sniffing around as well. But to start with, Kevin, do you expect Abraham to sign a new deal? And if not, what do you think ends up happening with him over the next 3 or 4 months?
So let's start with a little background. Abraham has been at Vélez since before the World Cup. Mm-hmm. So that's almost 3 years.
Yep.
They had the opportunity to sell him in multiple transfer windows. He's had interest, whether it was from Turkey or Spain. This isn't new. And quite frankly, Vélez is one of those teams that pays their players in Argentinian currency, and that keeps getting devalued because of inflation. Mm-hmm. So even if they offered him the same amount of money that he's making right now, it would be less than what he was making last year. I don't think he has, you know, a serious attachment to Vélez. It's not where he was born. It's not like Cristal or something for him. So I don't see why he would re-sign that contract. He has multiple offers, mostly from Spain. He has the European passport. I think his bags are already packed.
Probably, and they were probably packed for the last little bit, for sure. Maybe kind of continuing this, Chito, do you feel like the leverage is now with Abraham, considering that Meles kind of has to play him, given that they don't really have any other center backs at their disposal?
Yeah, especially because they not only lost a center back, they lost their captain.
Yeah.
And I think Abraham was a good leader of the team. Heinze always said amazing things about him. I recall that a couple of months ago when he lost a tooth just defending the team, a lot of fans were posting pictures about him saying, yeah, that's what we want on the team. So I think a lot of fans are going to put a lot of pressure just to see him on the field.
Yeah.
And especially because I think one of the reasons why he took this decision, it's because I'm pretty sure he had a lot of offers. So he has a plan B that definitely will take in the upcoming months. And because Vélez has a need to place him as a starter. So, yeah, I think we as Peruvian fans, we shouldn't be too worried about what's going on with Abraham.
Yeah, I think once Gianetti got sold to Atlanta, I think everybody kind of calmed down a little bit after the latest kind of, you know, potential hostage situation with Abraham and Meles. So, yeah, that's definitely encouraging. I guess what isn't encouraging is what's happening with another center back in Mexico, because kind of from one precarious situation, or at least previously precarious situation, to another, Anderson Santamaría, he was disciplined recently because he broke COVID-19 protocols in Liga MX after attending a party. He's had to now isolate for 10 days, produce negative tests, as well as pay a fine as a result of this. This occurred pretty much right as he was getting back into Atlas's 11. He was starting five games, or had started five games in the Clausura, but obviously that is now, well, I shouldn't say ancient history, but that's kind of been put at risk. First of all, Renato, what do you think this does for Santa Maria's stock at Atlas? Do you think he will now have to fight for his place again once he is available to play?
Well, I mean, with something like that, that is just pure stupidity from Santa Maria's. It's the Chele Rojas effect. Like, you just couldn't hold yourself, and then you just humiliate yourself like this, which is embarrassing. And not just that, not just on personal-wise, but also sporting-wise, because you were already a starter by already, and now you just kill your place in the team with a stupid move like that. That's just bad news for you, man. And I think that he's going to have to fight his way back, but even then, I don't think the Atlas coach is going to, like, be kind with him anymore. Well, at least how I think of it. And also, speaking of Santa Maria, it also just also leads to a question. Should Gareca still call him up? Well, and to that,
yeah,
I say no, because that what he did was unacceptable. It just makes not only him look bad, also like the Peruvian national team look bad, because if he gets called up, like, then we'll be it just be like considering like you're just giving a chance to someone who made a stupid decision to break protocols and make himself look like an idiot on national TV.
Well, I mean, further to the question about, you know, should he get called up or not, or will he get called up or not? Kevin, do you think that this does anything, albeit whether it's minor or not, to the center back pecking order as it stands?
I think it's been about 10 days. So we'll see if Santa Maria is actually frozen out at Atlas or if it just gets swept under the rug. But as far as on the national team, I think that's unfortunate on his part. If he does get frozen now in at Atlas, which, you know, could happen, that's completely on him. Mm-hmm. He's in, you know, center backs for Peru is where we actually have the most depth. Zambrano will be back after one more match suspension. We have Araujo, who I think is having his best season, period, for over there in Emin. And then we have young promising players like Gianfranco Chavez. You know, it's really anyone's position to lose. Like in the last qualifying matches, you know, we started Araujo. Gareca felt like maybe he wasn't up to it in that match. He started Santa Maria. I don't think either of them have won the starting spot at this point, so it's either of theirs to lose, and then Zambrano comes back, so that just hurts Santa Maria's chances further.
Yeah, definitely would. Well, you mentioned him there, Kevin, briefly. You guys are teeing me up with these fantastic segues here. We'll move over to the Emin situation right now, because it's pretty much all but certain that they're going to go down to the second division in the Netherlands, as they haven't won. Well, they hadn't won a single game as of the time of writing this rundown. But they are pretty far adrift from the relegation playoff as of right now. Didier Latorre, he's probably going to stick around, given that he just signed there. He's a young player. It's his first adventure in Europe, so. You know, when Emin get relegated, you imagine he's going to stay there and probably become a bit more of a key player in the Eredivisie, the Dutch second division. Jean-Pierre Reiner's on loan, so he just returned to Cadiz once the loan is over. However, it's Miguel Araujo and Sergio Peña who I think many Peruvians are going to be looking at in this regard, because they're still contracted for another year. And with the news that Araujo has Azed looking at him currently, Chito, what do you think about that potential move for Araujo staying in the Netherlands and going to a team that has become one of the four or five best clubs in the league?
I think it will be positive for Araujo. He's a leader at Emin. That's why he's the captain of the team as well. So I think it will be a good opportunity for him, and it will be a good decision for him to stay at the same league, a league that he's familiar with. He definitely is familiar playing against those strikers and scoring goals in that league. So I think it would be good for him. With Peña, I don't know if he will go back to Portugal or he will stay there. Hopefully he makes a good decision, because usually with Peña, what happened is that there's a really one good season, then he moves to a different team, and then he gets back to the bench.
Yeah.
So hopefully he makes a good call, whatever decision he takes.
Yeah, for sure. Renato, do you think that both of them will get the moves that they need to leave Emin? There are no reports or rumors at this point about Peña, at least anything concrete. There's at least something there with Araujo. Do you feel like either or both will get those desired moves away?
I'll say that it's unfortunate to see Emin on a difficult moment. I mean, they just won their first match of the season, which took a lot of work. But I do, no matter if they get relegated or not, they're going to leave, because I know that both of them have been speaking in interviews of how they're aiming to move, maybe take a next step forward. So for Miguel Araujo, as the rumors, I take it as rumors for now, but I wouldn't be surprised if they're looking at him. In fact, I can even see teams like maybe Feyenoord or PSV even look at Araujo, because given the pandemic and that those three teams are looking for a new center back, Araujo would be like a nice, cheap option. Like, you're getting a leadership like defender who knows how to defend well, which says a lot considering that Emin's possibly unfortunately the worst team in the Eredivisie. But I say Araujo saves their asses all the time. But he even knows how to score goals. He even takes the chances to score. So they'll be getting a pretty underrated defender, in my opinion. As for Sergio Peña, it's kind of difficult to say because, as Chicho mentioned, you don't know if Peña goes back to somewhere. You just hope he doesn't go back to the bench like he did in Portugal. But I do would like to see him in La Liga. Who knows? Maybe I would like to see him at Celta Vigo as an alternative to Denis Suarez.
Yeah, maybe Spain. A return to Spain could be in the cards for him.
He has the EU passport, by the way, now.
Yes, he does. So that will definitely help him. Kevin, what happens if either or both of them stay? I mean, I feel like this won't happen, but you can never really rule out anything with Peruvian players, unfortunately. So what do you think happens if either or both stay in the Eredivisie, in the second division, with regards to their stock with La Selección?
No, I don't think that they would be able to really argue their position if they go into the second division. That being said, I know Emin has had horrible form throughout the year, but they're only 5 points off from the relegation playoff.
Don't call it a comeback.
So they're 5 points off. There's like 11 matches left if I counted right. I think they'll give it their all to get this done. I don't know about Peña, but Araujo's a really like humble, driven player from what I've seen. And I think that they're gonna give it all till the end of the season. And that's when at least he will talk with, you know, AZ or any team that might come and find him. And realistically, he should have offers. He's killing it. It's not his fault that the team's results have just not been there.
Yeah.
I mean, you could say that Emin would be worse off without Araujo because I gotta say he's possibly one of the more underrated defenders in the league.
God, man.
If you take a look at his numbers, it's incredible.
Well, yeah, I mean, God, I shuddered at the thought of them without Araujo. Jesus Christ, that would be awful, really, if they didn't have him. But yeah, we shall figure out what happens here over the next couple of months. And maybe, you know, as Kevin kind of teased there, maybe Emin pulls off the great escape and stays up. And then we kind of delay this conversation for a few more months down the line. But we'll find out, obviously, whenever that time comes. So that'll do it for us on this episode. Thank you everybody once again for listening. I'm Peter Galindo. You can follow me on Twitter at GalindoPW, and you can follow the show at Peru Waltz. Renato, what is your Twitter and what is your final shout out for the week?
Twitter handle is Renato_Sun. I want to give a shout out to Cesar Vallejo for I want to wish them luck for the second leg away in Venezuela. I know it may have been a disappointing result to not at least score in the first leg, but the big thing is at least you guys did not get scored in away goals, which is the best part, and hopefully you can score in Venezuela, work your asses hard, and please, please give Peru a good name in the Libertadores.
There you go. Kevin, what is your Twitter and your final shout-out as well?
You guys can find me at kmontalvon7. And I was going to do Vallejo too, but I guess I'll go without a shout-out this time.
Hey, man, we can all shout-out Cesar Vallejo. I think we're all pulling for them, let's be completely honest. Chito, what is your Twitter handle and your final shout-out?
Well, my Twitter is Chito del Ocho. And, well, I just want to give a shout-out to Liga Uno Betson. Hopefully that means that, the good thing is that I won't see, like, five different sport book sites on the field sponsoring the same game, which drove me crazy. But the good thing, well, I don't know if that will happen or not, but hopefully this sporting site lets Peruvians out of the country to see the games using their services. I don't know if that will happen in the States, maybe only New Jersey, but you know, Peruvians in Europe will be able to follow Liga Uno without paying hundreds of dollars just to get Peru Mágico.
Let's hope, because anytime Peruvians can get more access, I mean, if you can get more access in Canada, surely you can get more access in the United States. It's just a matter of whether the rights dealers want to actually provide it. But that's another conversation for another day. But that'll do it for us this week. Thank you, everybody, for listening. This is the Peruvian Waltz team, and we are signing off.
Rubiños en el arco, la defensa es colosal. González orlando la torre, Nicolás Fuentes y Chumpitas. Chale Mifrin y Cubillas y el gran Perico León. Bailón y Alberto Gallardo completan la selección.